Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. When New York City Police Sergeant Paul Tuozzolo was shot and killed last month while pursuing an armed burglary suspect in the Bronx, he became the 116th officer to die in the line of duty in the United States this year. That was 15% higher than by November of last year, according to the National Law Enforcement Memorial Fund. As of last week, the fund says 64 police officers died from being shot this year, the highest since 2011, and above the 10-year average of 53 per year. 940 people have been killed by police this year, according to a Washington Post count. Last year's total was 991, so that might wind up a little down for the year. We talk a lot here about individual controversial killings by police and individual police officer deaths, like with Sergeant Tuozzolo and the officers who were ambushed this year in Dallas and Baton Rouge. So today, let's take a step back with Eugene O'Donnell, professor of police science at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Professor, welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian, happy holidays.
You too. The assassinations of police officers that horrified everyone and made the news, and President Obama spoke movingly in Dallas after the incident there, is the last time we talked about the topic. And that's typical for the media, but it's not at all typical of how police officers usually get killed on the job. Are there major patterns?
It's hard to discern. I mean, it's troubling at this point that you've had actually 20 ambushes this year. There have always been ambushes.
20 ambushes. 20. I didn't realize 20. I'm just saying I didn't realize 20 ambushes.
20 ambush killings. So it is a high number. And, I mean, there's always ambushes. And there was a time when there actually was a bona fide war on cops in the 70s, including in NYPD having cops killed, actually targeted for assassination. But the troubling number is that 20 ambush number. In terms of the overall numbers of cops being feloniously killed, actually in the Obama administration, over the course of 8 years, it's actually a lower number than in the Bush administration.
Do you hang that on the presidents at all?
Well, I mean, the idea that there's been some very unfair criticism of this president, that somehow he has orchestrated this situation. I do think that we do have to come to grips with the fact that the police officer's position has sort of been undermined and the authority of the officers have been undermined. And that may be playing into this, that, you know, anecdotally, you do hear more people are frontally uncooperative, assault of adversarial when the police are trying to do their jobs. Again, whether this will pan out in the long run, these numbers do fluctuate from year to year pretty dramatically. In fact, one of the better years, one of the lower numbers, only 27 officers, which is a good number relative to the other numbers, that was just a few years ago in the Obama administration in 2011, I believe. So the numbers go up, the numbers go down, but it is troubling that you have this kind of toxic mixture of kind of people ruminating, especially I think on social media. Their brains are churning, they have mental health issues, they have access to firearms. This kind of unbalanced hate speech really is poisoning the dialogue, and we need to really address that. And also, I think it does also further kind of this whole idea of people just lashing out that we're seeing internationally now. It's a real concern. You know, with complicated issues, there's this tendency to reduce it to the lowest common denominator, and in the minds of people that are unbalanced, most of the shooters, by the way, of police officers are white, not black. Most of the people that are shot by the police are white, overwhelmingly not black. We actually had a female African-American police officer shot in the head last night in Alabama. These things don't get reported, and if they did get reported, people would slow down, catch their breath, and try to see the real contours of these issues rather than this kind of emotionalist, you know, point scoring, playing on teams positions, which doesn't help anybody.
I've read that both killings of and by police are substantially lower than they were in past decades, especially if you go back to the 1970s. Do you know that to be true?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And certainly the country is safer. So there are people writing books and people making claims that somehow this is a dark era in crime in the country. It's absolutely not true. It's actually the fact that in 2014 we really hit a very significant milestone, which is a gigantic reduction in homicide, a 50-year low in homicide. So now people are reporting increases that are relatively small off that baseline, saying, oh, look at 2014, that's gone up. But actually, if you look at homicide, gun violence, it has diminished dramatically and absolutely correctly in a city like New York, where you had police being shot. The police shot a lot of people, fortunately, because the city is safe. You have a greatly diminished amount of violence. A lot of the increases currently in crimes are being driven by a handful of cities like Chicago. But, you know, every reason to believe that a city like New York is super safe. And the mayor, who is just your guest, I mean, he deserves credit because he did say that he would keep the city safe and that he would be able to reduce stop and frisk. And that has happened. So he gets credit in that regard.
We have paradoxical politics, the paradox of politics versus reality. More guns and fewer killings by gun at the same time. Also fewer killings but more incarceration. Are the politics of guns and of punishment disconnected from the realities of public safety?
Well, criminal justice, I mean, you follow Brexit, you follow the presidential election. Criminal justice is a great microcosm of it's hard enough to ethically, honestly try to get to the bottom of what these issues are, try to fix things, try to really see over the long haul what works and what doesn't work without this mischief of, I don't care what the facts are, don't bore me with the details. You know, I've been in the field as a police person, a prosecutor. I'm surprised every day with statistics and numbers and data. You find out things that you just wouldn't think intuitively, and we just have these shouting matches going on, and I just don't see partisan politics. In criminal justice, I just don't see it fitting. I just don't see the fit. I'm a Democrat. I'm a conservative. I don't know how that fits relative how you keep people safe, you make policing work, you treat people with decency, you minimize the footprint of incarceration, but you still hold people accountable. I don't see how picking sides helps in that conversation, to be honest.
Officer Tuozolo in the Bronx was killed chasing a fleeing home invasion suspect. How common is that kind of thing among those police officers, you know, who are shot and killed?
Well, that actually is the dangerous one is the crimes in progress calls, actually. So some people think it's the domestics, but that's sort of been debunked. The really dangerous ones are the NYPD, they call them the 30s, the 31s, burglaries in progress, robberies in progress, gun runs, man with a gun, no description, standing on Fordham Road. That's the stuff that's really dangerous. Fortunately, again, in New York, while the volume of calls is incessant and the cops are running around all the time, most of what they're running to is pretty insignificant. But, yeah, those kinds of events, and you saw in the last few police people that got killed, they were chasing armed gun people who had done things, bad things. So that is a significant risk to the cops, is these crimes in progress. But then again, we just have to remind ourselves, in New York City, we've had an 80 to 90%, it's almost unfathomable, reduction in crimes from the 1990s. It's just hard to believe. We really are the city, and this is not universal, and there's still pockets of issues, and you have to stipulate that. But, the city that you see today, I was just yesterday looking on the east side of Prospect Park, a place that I patrolled, which was notoriously overrun with gun violence. They took an apartment, not new construction, an apartment building. They renovated that new apartment building. I think a one-bedroom, maybe a two-bedroom, $40,000 a year in rent there. A house on Martens Street in Brooklyn. Some of your listeners will know that community. Mm-hmm. You were giving houses away. Woodruff, and Crown Heights, East Flatbush. Those houses now are going for upwards of $1.5 million.
Right.
So the renaissance of the city is really a thing to behold.
My guest is John Jay College police science professor and former police officer and prosecutor, Eugene O'Donnell. This summer, the NYPD union chief, Pat Lynch, had an op-ed in the Daily News that said, I'm going to read a couple lines, the police officers assigned to your local precinct are equipped with only a 9mm handgun and a basic bullet-resistant vest designed to stop a low-velocity handgun round. That's it. With that equipment, they're expected to face down attackers who may be outfitted with assault rifles, body armor, explosives, or, as was the case with the Dallas and Baton Rouge shooters, military tactical training. So here's what he calls for in the next line. That's why the NYC, New York City Patrolmen's Benevolent Association has repeatedly asked the NYPD to adequately prepare our members to respond to active shooter attacks by providing police officers on routine patrol with long guns, ballistic helmets, and bullet-resistant vests capable of stopping high-powered rifle rounds, along with the appropriate training. We aren't seeking to have a cop with an assault rifle posted on your corner, but this vital safety equipment must be readily available in the trunk of the patrol car or in the nearest police facility to be deployed at a moment's notice. And I'm just curious if that's a common request by police around the country right now and something cities routinely say no to.
Well, I think you have to look no further than Berlin to see where we're at this point. And, you know, could there be more Berlins before the holiday season is concluded? What if that happened on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, southbound on Fifth Avenue, on those crowded streets of our, you know, our city? How much carnage could somebody do? And who would stop this guy? Is there any plan in place? We have to look at the real world we inhabit. And it's as upsetting as it is. Every single New York City cop in the smallest, you know, the quietest precinct, in the 123 precinct in Tottenville, there's a potential in this environment for really horrific acts of violence, school shootings, mass casualty shootings in churches. And you really don't want to have a situation where the police arrive and they're not equipped. At the same time, do you want to change the ethos of policing, which is mostly peacekeeping, mostly conflict resolution, mostly nonviolent? Turn the dial in that direction? These are things that have to be, again, I don't see how partisan politics helps this. I just think you got to get to the bottom of trying to do an honest threat assessment and see and take it from there. I guess Manhattan has to be more heavily looked at, but every reason to believe we're a five-borough city. We've got Stadia and the outer boroughs. Every reason to believe some very, very bad things can happen. They could happen simultaneously. We could have a situation where we have four or five attackers. The truck stuff is really troubling because somebody could decide to do that in relatively short order. So it shouldn't be, you know, again, point scoring. Yeah. The union is going to do what it does for its members. But, you know, what objectively, how best to make these threat assessments is you know, and unfortunately, we find that often after the events that we were woefully ill-prepared.
But are you saying then that, in your opinion, the NYPD is not sufficiently outfitted in terms of equipment, the types of guns?
That's not my expertise. I have to plead guilty. That's not my expertise. There are people that are immersed in that and know it very well. But again, I think you go where the evidence and the expertise takes you. And certainly Manhattan Island has to really be looked at now, especially after these events in Berlin. I mean, it can never, ever again happen. Any of us that were around on 9/11, we can never have a repeat of that when the city was caught completely off guard and really never got its head around that event while it was taking place. The likelihood is we're going to have. We had one already. We had a somewhat bungled one there on 23rd Street. But just for anybody who's walked down Fifth Avenue, you know, St. Patrick's Cathedral, walk a few blocks south in our city, there are thousands of people out there in the holiday season. And, ordinary people, we don't want them to think like this, but we absolutely need law enforcement people to be thinking the worst-case scenario, to be up to speed on threats that are going on, and to go where we have to go. And unfortunately, that might take – I mean, we want to demilitarize the police. Unfortunately, the events of the last few years, San Bernardino, it raises questions about how far you can take demilitarization. You know, and the other issue, Brian, honestly, is most of the cops are civilian people. They're civilian-minded. They're not NRA members. They're not, you know, some of them are military veterans. A lot of them are kind of unhappy with firearms to begin with. They're not dying to carry guns. That's what they do as part of their job. Do you want to start handing out more sophisticated weapons to rank and file people? I think these are profound questions.
And are police organizations generally on the side of gun control, on the theory that the more arms on the street, the more danger for them, or more on the side of the right to carry laws on the theory that criminals fear an armed public?
Well, I mean, I don't know the whole picture, but I do know the Clinton administration played a good role in worth noting that they played a good role. They opened up the White House to police union organizations when Bill Clinton was in office, and actually moderated the police. I think the police were typically kind of a little bit reactionary, and there were some good interactions there. The COPS program providing some funds, so there was some interaction. I was disappointed with Mrs. Clinton that she didn't even meet with the police unions this year when she was running. I think that turned out to be a big mistake. I mean, the whole idea is we want to get people to the center. We want to get people that fix the country. With all due respect, that's my take. Try to get this extremism pushed out of these conversations. Try to get a practical approach. And, we have people, we have racist problems in the police business. We have giant problems, as we do in society. The answer to that is engagement, no question about it. You have to engage, listen, talk, communicate. You alienate people when it was almost like the police organizations were treated like they were some sort of hate group. That's not helpful. You're driving extremist police people further to the extremes, and middle and police people that are reasonable and reachable are going to be driven along with that when you make that kind of judgment that you're going to sort of paint the police with a broad brush. As you start talking about slave patrols, I mean, look at the New York City Police Department of today. This is a really diverse and young, multi-ethnic organization. These cops have grown up, with friends across ethnic and racial boundaries. There's a lot to work with there. Don't alienate people that are out there taking, making huge sacrifices. This is the week, by the way, the anniversary of Lou and Ramos officers being killed. This is an Asian officer, relatively new phenomenon. The other officer, Ramos, studying to be ministers, protecting the people in Bedford-Stuyvesant. It's a pretty profound picture. They would take the call. They would go in head first, fly blind into the most difficult situations. It's a really honorable profession. Let's emphasize the honorable part. Let's drive the racism, the bigotry out, and let's get the extremism out of this conversation. And again, with respect, it's just at least in criminal justice, the partisanship, because I don't think it helps picking partisan political, sides here.
Eugene O'Donnell, professor of police science at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian. Best to you and your listeners.
You too. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.